Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today, my guest is Anchorage psychologist Suzanne Strizek, and we're going to be discussing seasonal affective disorder. Depression is really one of the most common afflictions of humans, and we're going to see a little bit about where that illness, seasonal affective disorder, fits in. You can reach us today with your questions and comments. Our Anchorage local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. And of course, you know, we have a email address, and during the program, we'll be taking your emails as well at line one. And you have to spell that out, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, without any spaces, line one at alaskapublic.org. Dr. Strizek is a psychologist. She has a private practice here in Anchorage. And before that, and a little bit during the time, she, between 2000 and 2010, she was a professor at the University of Alaska, Anchorage, where she was also a director of the Psychological Services Center. And since 2007 or so, I can't remember exactly when, Suzanne, you went into private practice and have been, certainly now that's what you do for a living.
Yes, I do.
Welcome to Line One, by the way.
Glad to be here.
All right. So let's get started. Seasonal affective disorder. What are we talking about?
Seasonal affective disorder is a depression. It's a depressive disorder. It occurs seasonally, usually in the winter, when direct sunlight levels are low, either because of short days or because of cloudy skies.
So it is a depression. I remember going online or looking on the statistical manual before I came on or read somewhere that there's not a specific diagnosis of seasonal affective disorder, but it is part of the depressive syndrome or depressive illness.
Yes, you can be diagnosed with a depressive disorder and then have a seasonal component. And so you can not experience depression per se as a depressive disorder, as we think of it as like a chronic condition or one that repeats itself, but you can have a seasonal component to a depression that makes it almost like a biological disorder, something that occurs as a part of your physiology.
When I think of depression, I think of lots of variability, and there's certainly major depression, and then people have maybe situational depressions. Does seasonal affective disorder have some variability in severity as well?
Yes, it does. You can have a full-blown moderate to severe depression that's a seasonal affective disorder, or you can have something mild like the winter blues. Where maybe you only have a couple of symptoms of depression.
So I'm going to ask you what the symptoms are of seasonal affective disorder. And if you don't mind at the same time, maybe, you know, juxtapose those with what depressive symptoms are in a bigger sense.
Sure. That's really a good question. How can you tell the difference between depression and seasonal affective disorder, or SAD is typically what we call it? Seasonal affective disorder sort of distinguishes itself with symptoms like drowsiness, poor focus at work, oversleeping, even though the quality of your sleep may not be very good. It may be disrupted a lot, anxiety, irritability, things you don't often associate with depression, and social discomfort. It's hard to be around people. Kevin O'Leary, he was on about 3 weeks ago. He did a really nice show with you on psychotherapy. He tells a story about coming back to Alaska after being away for a few years on with his education. He and his wife return, and in the spirit of celebration, he stocks up on his favorite foods, cheese, cashews, and dark chocolate.
Mm. And sounds good.
It is. It's delicious. And he eats like it's, you know, it's his last meal until spring. And 35 pounds later, he comes to. And as you can attest, he, of course, lost the weight, but the lovely cashew had to go.
So, You know, it's got to be a matter of degrees. Again, I mean, many people may have periods of time during the wintertime where maybe they're eating a little bit more or putting on weight because maybe they're not as active. So how do you put this in perspective? I'm thinking about people out there who are thinking, oh, I'm overeating, I'm not as active, I don't feel like going out tonight. Do I have seasonal affective disorder? Or am I depressed?
That's a good start. Those are really good questions to ask. A major depressive disorder is probably more encompassing in its symptoms than seasonal affective disorder is. But as I list off these symptoms, you can also think seasonal affective disorder. Both depression and sad have a depressed mood, feeling sad or blue or down. Your interest and pleasure in things that ordinarily are enjoyable for you, those things go down, it diminishes. There's an appetite disturbance with depression. Usually with sad, it's overeating rather than undereating. Disturbances in sleep, people tend to oversleep, but you can have serious insomnia with seasonal affective disorder. Fatigue and lethargy is common to depression. It's a hallmark of seasonal affective disorder. And then there's the subjective experience of depression and sad, which are feelings of worthlessness, guilt about things that ordinarily you wouldn't or shouldn't feel guilty, and maybe even shame, feeling like there's something defective about you. And that sort of dovetails into the real serious symptoms of sad and depression, which is suicidal thinking or thoughts of death.
Mm-hmm. Or hurting yourself in some way.
Yes.
Does that go into thinking about risk-taking behavior or being a little, you know, doing some things that otherwise maybe a different time of the year you may not be trying to do because they're risky?
I think risky behavior is always an element when you're trying to end the discomfort, whether it's, especially if it's anxiety. When you get seriously depressed, your thinking, the quality of your thinking, the style of your thinking can get kind of skewed. Or unrealistic, it gets sort of confused. And so strange thoughts can enter, like maybe the world would be better off without me, or I can't do anything right, I might as well end my life. And seriously, the world is better with you in it. It's much better with you in it than out of it. And so that's more of a barometer of where you're at than reality.
I remind listeners again, we're discussing seasonal affective disorder with my guest today, Anchorage psychologist Suzanne Strzyzik. If you think this is a funny topic to be discussing at this time of year, you want to stay tuned. We'll help you understand why it may not be so funny. But in the meantime, if you've got questions or comments or had previous experiences you want to share with us, our number locally is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And again, you can email us during the next 45 minutes or so at line1@alaskapublic.org. Also, I want to point out that if you go to alaskapublic.org and hit the link to Line 1, you'll find today's program in which we will have a number of other links to information that we feel you can trust, as well as some short videos that give us a little bit more information about this topic. Dr. Strzyzik, how common is seasonal affective disorder?
About 6% of the U.S. population is estimated to suffer from SAD. The milder form of SAD, the winter blues, it's estimated about 14% of the U.S. population. Those folks tend to be clustered in the northern areas of the country, like Washington and Alaska. Some studies on Alaska residents have it at about 10% of Alaska residents suffer from SAD.
Just to get back, when you said, maybe you said this before and I missed it, so the more severe forms of seasonal affective disorder may be more thought of as a serious depression, maybe even a major depression. But when we talk about winter blues, we're talking about more of a milder form of the same thing, though.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like a major depression might be five or more of these symptoms I listed off.
Okay.
A mild or a minor one might be just a couple or three.
Okay. All right. So one of the ways you psychologists would stratify the severity of it is the number of symptoms, as well as the severity of each particular symptom. Is that, or is it just the number of symptoms that you really look at?
That's a really good delineation. It's like how intensely are you experiencing this symptom? Have you not slept for four or five nights,
right,
or is it just like a couple of days a week you can't quite drop off? And it's the subjective experience. I mentioned earlier thinking can get a little skewed with an intense feeling of social discomfort or an intense feeling of worthlessness. It can really seem like it's real, mm-hmm, like that's who you are. You're mm-hmm, like you're socially inept or people don't like you. Mm-hmm. And with a minor one, you're going to be more likely to question if that's really the case.
Your self-talk is different in a sense. If you're walking down the street and something happens, or you look at somebody or you do something and you're really saying, well, that I'm just socially inept, versus I wonder if I'm, you know, just being a little crazy here for a short period of time. So it's how you're talking to yourself is what you're implying, or how people may interpret it differently.
Absolutely. That's one of the most fascinating things about depression, is that it can really seem like it's something you are rather than something that's happening to you. And if it's happening to you, then you can control it. You can do something about it. If it's who you are, then that comes up for discussion.
Mm-hmm. And it would get much harder to treat. I keep, as a physician, I keep thinking of concrete things and neural circuits and how things are developed, and we get into certain thinking patterns, because I think of it now as neural circuits, just like if you learn to play baseball, you get certain circuits in your brain that are just stimulated enough and they're faster, more. So in a sense, the more, the longer you have these beliefs that this is you versus what, well, maybe I'm a little different, then it would make sense to me, it'd be much more difficult to treat.
It actually, the way you described it just now actually helps, I think. I don't know if this would be a general rule, but it helps me as a clinician to think that that's not the reality for them, but they're very deeply steeped in that mm-hmm. belief.
Mm-hmm.
And that mm-hmm. can be helpful for me, who's sitting on the outside of it mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. that person.
Mm-hmm. You've implied that it may be more common in northern climates. I believe I've heard that it's more common. I guess I would have to say I believe it's more common. Is that really true?
Yes, it is. It's the northern climates, like Alaska and Washington, are going to be where low light levels are likely to occur. So I think the numbers of people who experience seasonal affective disorder in Anchorage and in Alaska would be higher if people weren't so involved in outdoor activities in the wintertime, because that gets them outside and gets them moving.
So I guess it would make sense that in the opposite time of the year, that in the southern, at the high latitudes is what we would really should be saying, not northern climates, but southern latitudes in the high southern latitudes in what is our summer, would have significant amounts of seasonal affective disorder as well. Is that also true, like Australia and New Zealand?
Yeah, where the low light levels exist.
In the winter. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, that's why it might not be just isolated to winter. It's really more of a seasonal phenomenon whenever your low light levels are low.
So let me ask what may seem like a crazy question. Can it happen in the summertime?
Yeah, it can. But it's sort of paradoxic. You know, if you think of sad as very, the winter sad anyway, where the light levels are low, as very vegetative, like hibernating, The summer seasonal affective disorder is almost on the other end of the spectrum. I had a client, a 21-year-old fellow who just moved to Alaska, and he was not prepared for the long days and the bright nights. And it was like he became immortal. And sometimes I wondered whether he was. He was convinced his ideas were stunning in their potency, and he wanted to put them all into action. Mm-hmm. If only people like law enforcement officials would get out of his way. And so some people find that it's sort of like a hypomanic or a manic state, kind of like what you'd find in a bipolar disorder.
Right.
And it can be a relief after a depression, but really it's a condition of considerable suffering, summer sad is. Especially like a mania, even before you get the bill for your escapades, the heavy night of drinking, the extramarital affair, the 40-foot sailboat. It's a condition of restlessness, anxiety, weight loss, insomnia, poor appetite, impulse, instant gratification are sort of driving forces, and the only thing that really gets in the way is reality, and so it can be irritating, frustrating, perplexing.
Mm-hmm. Listening to you discuss that or talk about that makes me think about the fact that it seems that unlike what I think of as major depressive disorder or depression, there's more of a waxing and waning, an up and down kind of pattern to this, which I don't think about so much necessarily as with major depression. And it does make me think a little bit more of like what we think of as bipolar illness today. Am I over-interpreting what you're saying? Is the waxing and waning component or the seasonality distinctly different from other depressive problems?
Sad does belong to depression.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be included in what we would think of as a bipolar illness, although there's room for that. The existence of a summer seasonal affective disorder is actually kind of a recent kind of discovery, and so the cyclic nature of a bipolar illness or even a mild bipolar illness, which you think of as like a cyclothymia, it's a low-grade depression that alternates with a very low-grade hypomania or a mild mania, and so I think there's plenty of room for that, although officially sad belongs to depression.
Let me remind listeners again, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. My guest today is Suzanne Strizek. Suzanne is a psychologist here in Anchorage in private practice. She spent a number of years as a professor at the University of Alaska as well. Our topic is seasonal affective disorder. If you've got questions or comments, a couple of ways to get a hold of us today. Our local number, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Well, we've kind of beat around the bush a little bit, but I wanted to see what you had to say about causes. I'm always interested in what us physicians call the etiology, but so what is it that drives this condition? What causes it?
We think of three different causes for seasonal affective disorder. Probably the one that seems to be the biggest factor is a disruption in your circadian rhythm. That's a disruption in your biological clock, the clock that helps you to feel drowsy at a particular time of the evening so you can fall asleep, or to become alert at a certain time of the morning, get you interested in your surroundings and get you moving. And so that clock gets disrupted, and so it can look like it's midday and you don't have the energy to brush the cookie crumbs off of your shirt. The second cause seems to be the low light levels Like they disrupt the circadian rhythm, they also disrupt your vitamin D production, which has a direct impact on that wonderful neurotransmitter serotonin. The serotonin is responsible for regulating mood and preventing things like depression or anxiety, prevents irritability, kind of keeps you at a nice even keel, a sense of well-being. Serotonin also regulates basic processes like sleep and appetite. And then the third is, doesn't get a lot of look at, but it's mostly like genetic invariability.
So it does have a tendency then, you're implying to run in families, it's more likely that someone else in the family suffers the same.
Yeah, it's got a heritable component to it.
So changes in the circadian cycle, something about light, sunlight acquisition in the genetic are the things we know that seem to be driving this factor.
Yeah.
Dr. Strizek, we have a caller. I want to take her call, and then we'll keep going along in this direction. Taylene, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Thank you for taking my call and approaching this subject. I truly appreciate it. I took years to figure out that I suffer from seasonal affective disorder. I was born in Arizona and moved to Alaska at 9, and I, although never diagnosed by a doctor, I do believe my mother, my sister, and my brothers all suffered from seasonal affective disorder as well because of, as I look back now on symptoms. And I think one of the things that was really difficult for me in the journey was I went between therapy and doctors. My situation was a little different because my hormones were also awry since I had liver disease. At the time, I've since had a transplant, and so my hormones are not all wacky anymore. And I don't really suffer from seasonal affective disorder to the degree that I did, but I still feel it. And my liver symptoms go hand in hand with the depression. I also appreciated you mentioning the vitamin D because proper nutrient level has been the counterpoint, the real mainstay of this journey that I've been on, nutrition and sleep and the rest of, the body needing so much rest. And so I appreciate the call. I wanted to let people out there know that, and I gave my name, and so a lot of people know this information from a book that I wrote already, but I don't mind sharing it. I want people to know that everybody has something, and a lot of us in Alaska, especially from European ancestry, that come from high sun climates like Arizona or California or places like that, don't expect it when we get here, especially in the 60s, like I did. And it's okay. Eat good food, take lots of vitamin D, and consult somebody. You'll be all right. And thank you again.
All right.
And I'll take your comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for your call, Taylene. Your comments?
That was really helpful. She presented a good picture of that. I was thinking about differential diagnosis, that sometimes you can confuse seasonal affective disorder with other things like a legitimate or standalone anxiety disorder, but you can also confuse it with physical illness.
Right.
And so I think she talked about seeing somebody and getting to your physician and having your vitamin D levels checked, seeing if there's anything else on board that's going on with you. Mm-hmm. Very helpful.
The vitamin D issue is an interesting one, and I want to make the comment because there's been a lot of good work done on vitamin D levels. And certainly you're right. Vitamin D is an immune modulator. It has a lot to do with almost every system in our body. And in fact, it is not a vitamin at all. It's a hormone because it does have receptors on almost all of our. And so it's misnamed as well as everything else. But in sunlight, ultraviolet B radiation starts the production in our body. And we need livers and kidneys to complete it. But where I'm going with this is because of the renewed interest in testing for it, you would be surprised, and physicians are surprised, and scientists are surprised to find that we see low vitamin D levels in Tucson, in Guatemala, in Hawaii. And when you look into that, you also begin to realize we don't spend much time outdoors as we used to.
Right.
So the question is, why would that be the case? And not only do we spend more time outdoors, we put on sunscreens when we go out, and we wear clothes, and we stay out of the sunlight. So it's interesting that there may be more unappreciated, possibly, seasonal affective disorder in other parts of the country, or we may see it, begin to recognize it more if vitamin D is truly an important factor, because there are definitely low vitamin D levels in southern climates.
Yes, it does. It makes a lot of sense when you think that when you get a good heat wave, you really need to be inside and out of that sunshine.
Yeah, it's not even heat, though. I mean, when you look at some of the studies, most people, we spend almost all our time inside. We're watching TV. We're not going outside and running around. We work inside. We used to be farmers. I mean, there's huge differences in just the amount of time that humans now spend outdoors, and there's more and more reasons not to go outdoors because of heat and so forth and air conditioning, which makes it more common. Anyway, so the vitamin D issue may have links in other parts of the country.
Well, you make a good point, too, though, about being inside. I think there's a culture that supports staying inside, a focus on work productivity, and sometimes people focus on work to the exclusion of other things and get a lot of strokes for that, overt success, and so that can sort of put you indoors too.
We're going to take our mid-program break here. I want to remind listeners again, you're listening to Line 1, your health connection. Our Anchorage number is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a short break, and we'll continue to take your calls and any emails with Susan Strusik. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, your health connection on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Line 1, Your Health Connection, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcast of Line 1, Your Health Connection on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, your health connection. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard, and I'm inside today not getting vitamin D. Today I'm feeling your questions on seasonal affective disorder. My guest is Dr. Susan Strusik. She's a psychologist here in town. For a number of years was a professor at the university, but now is in private practice. If you've got questions or comments, you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Give us a call at 550-8433. Our toll-free number is 1-888-353-5752. Remember, you can listen at any time by going to alaskapublic.org and finding the Line 1 link. All our past programs are there. You also can go to iTunes, go to the podcast, put in the word Line 1, and you can find our previous podcast there as well. If you're listening at 7, between 7 and 8 on a Monday night, you're listening to a rebroadcast, however, from KSKA, and we will not be here to answer your questions. So if you've got questions or comments, this is the time to make the phone call or the email. Dr. Strzycik, we did get a specific question related to vitamin D and seasonal affective disorder from a listener. I don't know the answer myself. Perhaps you do. It says, is there any direct correlation between low vitamin D and seasonal affective disorder? That is, I guess, have there been studies where people with seasonal affective disorder have been looked at to see what their vitamin D levels are and comparing that with people who also have low vitamin D levels and don't have seasonal affective disorder, for example? You know the answer to that question.
I know there's research on vitamin D and its role in seasonal affective disorder, that typically, you know, if you get your lab work done and your vitamin D levels are low, there are things that you can take supplements, and that will improve mood. Helps it to improve mood.
Okay. Another caller, Susan. You're on line one.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I went to college in Fairbanks, and I spent 15 winters there, and boy, it seems to me Fairbanks might be a real lab for SADs because they get a lot less daylight there in the winter than here. But there, I learned to cross-country ski, and one of the things, I haven't really suffered from SADs in Anchorage, and I wonder if there's a relationship between people who embrace winter and ski and run outside at night and SADs, if that is something that could help or not. Has there been any research on exercise related to SADs?
Exercise has a really great effect on depression in general, and getting outside even at night is going to get a lot of those endorphins moving in your brain that otherwise wouldn't be moving if you weren't exercising. Working out, having an exercise regimen is wonderful. And then if you can get outside in the daytime, which a lot of Alaskans do, they love winter sports, and I think that's a real protective factor, not only because you're getting what light is available, but you're getting some movement, which is really good for your brain.
Oh, good. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
When we were on prior to the break, there were a couple of questions that I didn't ask that I'd like to go ahead and go back to, and more on the epidemiology. Is it more common in men than women, and in what ages? Those are a couple of things that often are important to kind of flesh out as we try to understand problems.
Women tend to be more vulnerable to seasonal affective disorder than are men. And it looks like the older you get, the more vulnerable you are to SAD. So I think the cutoff point is about age 30. After age 30, you're going to be more vulnerable than before.
Is that the age and the sex distribution common of all the depressive illnesses as well?
For women, they tend to there tend to be more women depressed than men, with depression in general, you can have your first depressive episode as early as childhood in your mm-hmm. teens, mm-hmm. and many people who have depressive disorders started that they had their first episode as a teen. Generally, you think that we think in terms of if you've had one episode of depression, then you're likely to have a subsequent one.
When I hear that women have more depression than men, and knowing culture and men, I guess I know men pretty well. I wonder if there's a kind of a selection bias there in that it's hard to get men to come in and talk about these things, whereas women will more likely. And so we may have a false idea about the number of men affected with depressive illnesses in general.
Yeah, that's I guess it's a tricky question depending which gender or you ask. But I think women and men, there is a different way of dealing with adversity and mm-hmm. trouble mm-hmm. between women and men, culturally yeah. speaking.
Yeah, and I guess this is a little off the subject, but I guess when we talk about severe depression and suicide and hurting yourself, men have a better not a better way, a more severe way of addressing those particular problems. They're more likely to follow through and be successful.
That's well said. Yeah, they tend to be more action-oriented.
Right.
And if women jump into action, it tends to be more subtle kinds of things.
Yeah. And not as definitive. Yeah, okay.
Not as easily traceable.
Okay. So what is the outcome of seasonal affective disorder? And what I mean by that is, again, I think about in a medical way, as I say, if someone's got arthritis and it goes untreated, then there's lots of joint destruction and it may lead to chronic disabilities. So what happens to seasonal affective disorder over time, particularly if it's untreated? Does it mutate into more serious depression? Do many people handle it and go along their way? Or is it kind of just manifest itself seasonally for the rest of their life kind of thing?
It kind of depends on how you manage it. And hopefully today we'll have time to talk about some of the treatment options, things you can do. But if a person's sort of left to their own devices and they don't have a lot of information about how to take care of it, SAD can take a real toll on functioning, so that your range of options become limited. It takes a toll on the quality of your relationships, so you may not be able to take care of your relationships quite as well as you used to. You may not do your work as well. You may not get along with your boss as well. Academic functioning, taking care of your physical well-being. It's really hard, even though you know exercise is good for you, good diet is essential to feel well. You just may not have the gumption to do those things.
One more question. I do want to get into treatment, but before I do, I want to ask another question that correlates with the northern latitudes, and that is, what's the incidence or the prevalence or the problem with seasonal affective disorder in other cultures that live in northern climates? Particularly, I know you've had some work with the native populations. Do native populations seem to be as affected, even though they're in very northern latitudes? And if not, why might that be?
I haven't seen any research on seasonal affective disorder with ethnic groups, but I love thinking about this, and there may be a link, a protective factor, for Native people who have access to local foods, wild fish and game, and indigenous plants, and there may be real protective factors in those foods and in that way of life that are very helpful to them, that maybe a European diet, a white European diet, may not afford you.
I don't want anybody to overreact to this, but that's one of the reasons that Alaska Natives and Canadian Natives across the northern latitudes do not have as much vitamin D deficiency as they acquire it in the diet, much better than in their diet than what us white folks do with our diet. It's much harder to get enough vitamin D.
Yes.
From the diet.
Even locally grown foods, like foods out in the Matanuska Valley, we've got some really great farmers, and they bring food into the Saturday markets, and it's very rich food.
What about treatment? What are the treatment options? Let's kind of ferret those out.
Yeah, That's the thing about seasonal affective disorder, and I think sometimes we think of mental illness as something we're kind of stuck with, and in many cases, mental illness is a chronic condition and a lifelong thing that you have to manage and live with. But there are real things you can do about seasonal affective disorder, and hence depression. Our favorite, the thing that we think of most often when we think of SAD, is phototherapy, light therapy. And there's a lot of Alaskans who have SAD lights. So broad-spectrum lights do seem to facilitate production of hormone D. and it looks like about 50% of people who use light boxes get some relief. And if the number of people who get success jumps up to 80%, if you tailor it to your sleep-wake cycle, like if you're typically up at 7, that's when you'd use a light box. You certainly wouldn't use it at night when you're trying to go to sleep.
Hmm.
And vitamin D, you can visit your physician and get your vitamin D levels checked, or your D levels checked, and then you can take vitamin D supplements. That's going to help with your energy. It's going to help with appetite control. It's going to help with getting a little more serotonin moving around in your brain, which will help give you a sense of well-being, a sense of optimism, a sense of peacefulness, relaxation. Phototherapy will do that too. Acetylcholine, you may get a little bit more acetylcholine, another neurotransmitter that improves sleep quality and gives you some immune protection. Also enhances libido, which we kind of think of as sex drive, but it actually encompasses something more general like life energy, desire, interest, willpower, gumption, maybe a little bit of testosterone jumps up. Negative ion therapy is also, in addition to phototherapy, it's had similar positive effects to phototherapy. Other things that can be useful are getting evaluated for an antidepressant. There's been real success with Wellbutrin XL, and a newer antidepressant, Valdoxin, is hypothesized to work on melatonin and serotonin function, which are your big circadian rhythm kind of brain function mechanisms. So there's antidepressants, psychotherapy. Most of the studies with psychotherapy and SAD have been done with cognitive behavior therapy, which primarily addresses the way you think and subsequently the way you feel. And it seems to be that psychotherapy is more robust. The effects of psychotherapy are more long-lasting than phototherapy, negative ion therapy, increasing your vitamin D levels, because you learn skills for challenging dysfunctional thinking, and you learn skills for coping.
I don't want to interrupt you, but that's an important point, because that's certainly a knock on medications, which I agree with. Anytime you're using a medication for psychological or illnesses where there's psychological component, we're not teaching anybody how to adapt or handle the problem. But I hadn't thought about it with the satellites. So that people that are self-treating themselves, in a sense, are missing out on an important aspect of things which psychotherapy can provide.
Yes,
and none of the other therapies really provide.
Well, and you know, that's an interesting thing, because with antidepressants and phototherapy, you may not learn those skills, but sometimes people can teach themselves the skills if they're feeling well enough to start sort of learning it. Oh, wow, I can challenge that doesn't have to be the case. Or they do some reality testing, but there's phototherapy, you can actually go too far with it. And so you actually need some help with phototherapy, because if you don't do it right, you can actually kind of trigger yourself into a hypomanic or a manic state.
Other treatments, I interrupted you.
Let's see, what else? Self-care, I think of self-care, but maybe all of this is self-care. Exercise, lots of research on the benefits to healthy brain function and mood with exercise, regular exercise. You know, if you tend to be a pretty sedentary person, you can even start with, like, that there's been some really nice research that even 15 minutes, like or 5 or 10 minutes, 3 times a day of cardiovascular exercise has a significant impact on mood. And so you could even start out with 5 minutes a day. Nutrition, there are foods you can eat that will give you a sense of well-being. Typically, we crave carbohydrates, sugars, desserts, breads, pastries when we have seasonal affective disorder. But what the body is really craving is protein. So you can go for meat, eggs, cheese, but you can also eat things like grains like quinoa, beans, tofu. Those are good, too.
Remind listeners again, this is Line 1, your health connection. We're talking about seasonal affective disorder. We've talked about who gets it, how often they get it, what the symptoms are. And we're beginning to talk at some length on treatment. If you've got questions or comments, let me give you a couple of ways to get in touch with us today. Our local number is 550-8433, 550-8433. Toll-free number 1-888-353-5752, and our email address line1@alaskapublic.org. We've got about 15 more minutes or a little less. If you've got those questions about any of the things you've heard today or would like to make comments, please give us a call at that number again, local number 550-8433. Do you want to talk more about light therapy? You've mentioned that there are good ways and bad ways to use it, or where would you like to go with the treatment?
There is something about light therapy that might help be helpful in making decisions about using it. I actually forgot one thing about self-care that people might like to hear about. I know it was gratifying for me. Power naps in the middle of the day. If you're really super drowsy, there's research. There's a book out there. I think it's called Take a Nap, Change Your Life. A woman researcher did some work on the effectiveness of naps, like a 30-minute nap in the middle of the day or early in the day. It improves memory and problem solving. So you can add that to your list. Light therapy. Usually you can go to a light store and buy sad lights. Usually it's about a strength of about a 10,000 lux of diffused white fluorescent light. There's been some research with broad spectrum light, but it seems like the white fluorescent is just fine. Those allow the skin to produce the D. Usually your relief is immediately, sometimes it's several days, but usually you feel the difference right off the bat. And you can always tell when your neighbors are using their sad lights because it looks like a UFO has landed in their living room. They're just super bright. Frequency is usually a couple of weeks in the morning, daily, throughout the winter season, usually tailored to your sleep cycle.
Jennifer, you're on line one.
Hi. I've suffered SAD since I moved to Alaska, and the book Wind and Blues helped me a lot. I did the light therapy, but I also wanted to add a dawn simulator is so helpful here in the dark of winter. It's set on a rheostat. You get 30 minutes of graduated light, and it wakes up all the internal parts of your body so that when you actually get out of bed, you are awake. That is still sleeping, so I didn't want people to miss out on that great opportunity.
Mm-hmm. So that way you're using light in a more natural, realistic way, it sounds like.
Right. From what I read in Wind Blues, your body has to have light coming to the eyelids to stimulate all of the glands to start waking you up. And Alaskans, when you get up in the darkness, our internal body is still sleeping. And so the dawn simulator clicks on 30 minutes before graduated light helps wake up that internal body. And when it's time to get up, you can actually get up and get going. Then I would also do the light therapy box, which made a big difference.
Thanks very much for your comment.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Dr. Strizek, any experience with a Dawn simulator yourself?
Yeah, it's really nice. It makes a great gift for somebody who's just moved up here.
Let's when we talk about effectiveness, sometimes it's relatively easy to show some effectiveness. Let's categorize the effectiveness a little bit. Do we know, for example, that psychotherapy or antidepressants are, as a rule, more effective for more people than exercise or self-care or vitamin D? How would you strategize? How would you rank these therapies?
It's a great question, and it has a great answer. It all of them work. It looks like there's some variation in the effectiveness, but really what's really going to hit it is combining your therapies, like combining the best of the things that really work for you. Like some people really love winter sports. They love to get out and ski. They like to move around. And they can combine that with a little bit of psychotherapy so that when they are feeling good, they're in a place to learn some new skills and dealing with, you know, the troubles that come up for them. Some people prefer antidepressants in psychotherapy. That's actually been demonstrated in research to be very effective to combine medication and therapy. Exercise and diet adjustments combined with getting outside for a walk, very powerful things that you can do. And you really will feel better. That may be the real upside to being in Alaska and having seasonal affective disorder as something that we have to deal with, is that it really gives you a chance to explore ways to really feel good.
Vic, you're on line one.
Hi, two-part question about vitamin D. If you're not taking supplements, are you pretty much sure of being vitamin D deficient by the end of winter? And secondly, short of a blood test, how do you know if you are deficient?
Yeah, those are maybe more medical questions, so I'm going to try to address them and ask Dr. Strizek to editorialize. One, you cannot tell if you're vitamin D deficient without a blood test. I don't know of any particular test other than getting a level to see where it is. You want to be also a little bit careful about the results. The number that's accepted as normal depends a little bit on the way the test is done. And there is a little bit of play in national guidelines. They've been loosened to a little bit lower number recently. And so there's still a lot of debate about that. But, you know, anyway, the answer to your question, you need to get a test to really see where your level is. And your other number was, if you don't get supplements and you live in Alaska, can you still be vitamin D efficient or have enough? My vitamin D level after 30 years in Alaska was normal. I think, again, it gets to the difficulty in the physiology. Vitamin D is very important in immune function, and I do a lot of allergy work, and I've talked about vitamin D and allergy a lot, so I'm pretty familiar with this. The problem in Alaska is really that there's very few days of the year, regardless of how much time you're outside, where adequate ultraviolet B radiation really is present. And so it is highly unlikely I got enough vitamin D from the sunlight after 30 years of living in Alaska. It wasn't because I lived here. Now, maybe it had something to do with going outside a little bit. We don't know. But I think there's probably variability in individuals in their metabolism of vitamin D. Getting it from food, vitamin D in milk is supplemented to provide enough to prevent rickets, but it does not seem to be enough by itself. Oily fish is the single biggest food source of vitamin D, and that's one of the reasons Native Alaskans have so little problem, and Inuits in northern Canada had a little problem. So there is ways to get it through diet. The national recommendations, to be sure you got enough vitamin D, however, is to take a supplement.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Maybe more than you wanted to know, but that's any other additions to that, Dr. Strizek?
You covered it.
Okay.
Very well.
All right. What about prevention? What should we say about preventing seasonal affective disorder?
Tends to be the same as the treatment. If you do those things that we talked about earlier that help you once you've got seasonal affective disorder, they're going to be really effective in preventing it. Of course, you probably wouldn't want to take a medication prior to developing SAD. But the other things, including psychotherapy can be fun. Definitely very preventative.
We're in our last couple of minutes, so I'm going to stop asking questions and give you a minute or two to make some comments about what you want our listeners to recall, what's important to remember about today's program.
Seems like that because we live in the North, we may be more vulnerable to SAD, seasonal affective disorder, and winter blues than folks down south. And it can interfere with your ability to function effectively, and it can have sort of a disintegrating impact over time. And we do have a problem with really impaired functioning in Alaska. People can develop addictions. They can become very depressed. And there are activities that prevent and treat seasonal affective disorder that'll both alleviate the condition and give you a sense of well-being and protect you. And that's very good.
And we don't want to discourage. I'm going to editorialize self-treatment. But there are some issues that we alluded to, or Dr. Strizek alluded to, that may be confused for seasonal affective disorder that sometimes may need a professional to really help you make sure you're on the right course to make sure, and that would increase the likelihood of success with treatment. Dr. Strizek is a psychologist here in Anchorage. There's a link to her website and how you can get a hold of her on our alaskapublic.org website. I want to say my personal thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
It was a pleasure.
All right. Next week, we're going to return. And before I tell you who's going to return, I want to remind everyone you can join today's conversation on KSKA via Facebook. And you can find those links at our website, alaskapublic.org. Excuse me. And then I'll remind everyone that next Monday, August 20th, we're going to return to the issues of psychology when we're going to be talking with Dr. Carol Craddock. Dr. Craddock is a psychologist in the Chicago area who is a specialist in the psychological aspects of divorce. We'll be talking about when divorce may be the right answer, when it may not be the right answer, what your other options are, and what are the effects of divorce on both the parents and the children, and what can be done to decrease the likelihood of complications in the area of divorce. So want to tune in and learn more next Monday, August 20th from 2 to 3 p.m. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and was our audio engineer today. Thanks for listening, and especially to those who called and emailed. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1, Your Health Connection is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.